Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Need Some Introduction. In today's episode, Sona has caught up with the FX series The Veil up until the third episode, the three that are available currently. She's also watched the first five episodes of Under the Bridge, all that's currently available, also available on Hulu, both shows, and we'll be discussing both of those series in the upcoming conversation. A few show notes, of course, as usual, if you'd like to reach out to us, send us an email to needsomeintroduction@gmail.com. On the podcast, I just recently published a new episode regarding the Apple TV science fiction series, Dark Matter, comparing and contrasting it to the source novel, yet another series or project that deals with multiverses, something that's very common in the science fiction stories of today. And last week, I published an episode where I discussed the big plot twist in the Apple TV series, Sugar, and I did just catch up on the next to last, the penultimate episode of that series. I should say season, but I'm pretty sure this is the end of the road for this series. I was pretty frustrated with this current episode, but I'll have my final judgment on that series when it wraps up next week. So that will be in this same slot at the end of next week. One more piece of entertainment news for you and possibly help you with your weekend watch recommendations. The Iron Claw, which I had reviewed here on the podcast just a few weeks back, is premiering streaming on HBO Max this weekend, or both HBO and Max. And I believe it's available at the time that I'm dropping this episode. And one bit of news that just came in today when I was looking through the headlines, it looks like there will be a season two of Shogun, which on the one hand is not very surprising because that was a phenomenally successful series. On the other hand, a bit surprising because season one of that series pretty much covered the entirety of the novel itself. I usually would be against this need to go off book, and we saw how that went with the Game of Thrones series, by the way, as an example. But in this particular case, I think it might just work. This series has created a group of characters that are very well defined psychologically. That is an enormous book that has a lot of insight into those characters, which have already been modified significantly by this series of television. But you have created some loved and complex characters. And if you need to come up with more intriguing plots, we have the actual historical record, considering that that first season of TV is based on a true historical character and some mostly accurate historical events, at least at the highest level. It would be pretty easy to take this tumultuous period of time in Japanese history and expand it into at least one more season of show. And I do trust these showrunners and writers that they will come up with something high quality here. Fingers crossed. We need more good TV. Speaking of good TV, not great TV, but good TV, I do want to recommend the brand new series on Netflix called Bodkin. Bodkin is a fictional Irish town in this world of the series. In the series, a popular American podcaster, played by Will Forte, goes to this Irish town to investigate the disappearance of some young people, two men and a woman, from about 20 years earlier, a cold case that has garnered some internet fandom, because all these people disappeared on the night of the last time that this town had their Samhain Festival, which of course is the source of our celebration of Halloween here in the US. He ends up getting paired up with an Irish journalist who has her own trauma that she's escaping. Her life may be at risk, so she's laying low while she is helping, reluctantly, this podcaster do an investigation. And there is this tension between traditional journalism, what is the purpose of that, to reveal the truth, for example, her morality around that. And it's questionable how moral she is in some of the decisions she makes as she endangers people for the purposes of her investigation. And then contrasted to this podcaster who really just wants to make a good story and get an audience. And it turns out he has his own backstory. He needs this podcast to be a hit. And that tension, which is really mostly the first half of the series that really delves into that, is probably the strongest aspect of this series, and it's what makes it unique in this overall genre of television. With the popularization of true crime podcasts and, of course, TV adaptations, there's so many of these shows that we're discussing right here on the podcast, for example, there are questions that are being explored here seriously but comedically about the morality of turning trauma into entertainment. Another intriguing aspect to the series, of course, is this teasing of the fact that there might be something supernatural going on. There are elements here of folk horror. This sleepy Irish town, what are the secrets these people are keeping? Minimally, it feels like some kind of small town conspiracy story, something like The Wicker Man or Kill List. But of course, all of that turns out to be red herrings, and it's pretty clear early on, so I don't even consider that much of a spoiler. It really does not try to sell itself as a horror series, other than maybe just during the setup. What it really does start to become is another familiar genre of British series, the sleepy town that is trying to hide some criminal conspiracy or some dark past that implicates a lot of the people in the town. And it is a satisfying mystery. The payoff is satisfying. For me, I would say that the second half, the back half of the series, which really focuses on unraveling that mystery, works really well. It kept me clicking through. That's really why I kept watching all the way through. The driving force became less about this investigation of the morality of the creation of the podcast and more about unraveling this mystery. And the characters are intriguing. The performances are solid of these town folks. And the mystery doesn't cheat. It gives us a satisfying mystery that in the end pulls together almost every single one of these divergent plot threads we've seen earlier on. Pretty much everything, like they are in these series, every story that someone's telling you casually over a beer ends up being a clue to unraveling the mystery at the end. So it all pays off. It's all well constructed. It's solid, if a little generic for this type of genre. And then there's the added sauce, the social critique of the podcasting and the true crime fixation that the culture has. So overall, very solid. And that series is Bodkin, and it's available right now on Netflix. Okay, on to the conversation. Soane and I discussing The Veil, Under the Bridge, and yet again, a little bit about Baby Reindeer. All right, Soane, so we haven't recorded in a few weeks. I want to talk to you about The Veil, and maybe more so even Under the Bridge. And I think we are now 5 episodes into 8 of Under the Bridge and 3 episodes out of 6 for The Veil. So halfway through The Veil. Maybe we could start with The Veil briefly. My interest in this series was, it sounded interesting. I have a very mixed relationship with this writer. He's the guy who created Peaky Blinders, which I'm not a huge fan of, but is a huge hit, obviously. And then, but very mixed on his projects in general. But I thought this was very intriguing. I do like spy stories. I do like when people are being duplicitous, when you don't know how much of what they're telling you is the truth, or when they're lying and they're telling you the truth in their lies, which is all being explored here in this show. Oh, and I wanted to mention to you, because you recommended this on the podcast back in the day, The Night Manager is coming back, not for one season, but 2 seasons. It just got a 2-season pickup.
Wow.
6 years after the first season.
That's so strange. With Tom Hiddleston or no?
With Tom Hiddleston and Hugh Laurie, which, you know, which we don't know what happened to him at the end of that. I was surprised, actually. I thought this was going to be Tom Hiddleston, like more like an anthology almost, where he can move around from one role to another. But they say that Hugh Laurie's coming back. So I'm like, I don't know if I like that idea as much, to be honest. But we'll see how it goes. I very much liked the first season, which you recommended here.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Unexpectedly. I'm sure I mentioned I watched it on a plane. I was traveling a lot to San Diego from New York during that period of time. I had a big chunk of time. So I started it on the plane to San Diego, and I couldn't wait to get back on the plane to watch the rest of it when I came home, which says a lot, I feel.
Yeah, these are British seasons, even though this is an American co-production. But traditionally, this is why they get big stars in all their shows. These are 6-episode seasons. Same thing with The Veil, by the way, also a British co-production. And these are going to be, I think, 2 short seasons, and they'll probably shoot them back to back or soon together. It's kind of what they've done with, Apple TV has done with another spy show, which is Slow Horses. I do recommend that show too. So anyway, if you are watching The Veil, looking for other interesting spy stuff to watch, definitely check out Slow Horses, which is coming back for a 4th season just in a few more months. They're just churning these seasons out, which is very fun to see something on the clock that, you know, you don't have to wait 4 years in between seasons. It just comes on a regular schedule. Very entertaining show, adaptation of those very popular spy novels. And of course, The Night Manager, which I think they're just starting production on the next season, which is probably, we won't see it till probably early next year, but there'll be 2 more seasons. So that'll be fun as well. And definitely check out the first season of that show, which is terrific. I agreed. It was really sexy and globetrotting and beautifully photographed. And yeah, a real fun watch. Not as sexy, but I am still intrigued. Another reason I was curious about The Veil was I very much did like the 2-episode premiere last week and continue to enjoy this episode, but the reviews from critics have been so negative. I'm like, how bad can this show get in just 6 episodes? Because the dynamic here, just I could just watch the dynamic between these two women. What is their true backstory? How they're trying to manipulate each other, sometimes telling each other the truth, sometimes telling them lies, and what their true agendas are. This is very intriguing to me. This is what I like about spy fiction. And it's working for me so far. How did you like it?
I really like it. And in keeping with what I try and do when we talk about a show, I haven't read much about it online. So I was actually surprised to hear you say the reviews are bad, because I've really been enjoying it so far. As you said, maybe it all falls apart on the back end. I don't know. But I really like this story they've set up. I'm sure you won't be surprised to hear me say, I love that there's two strong female characters here that we're watching. And then the men are kind of like just, you know, on the periphery a little bit. Although I wouldn't be surprised if they have a bigger role in the back half. I like the dynamic between them. I like how we're learning more about them and wondering what's true and what's not. I like the role of the obnoxious American who comes in right. and knows he's the obnoxious American and completely owns it and does not care one bit that you you may feel he's overstepping and doesn't know what he's talking about. He's confident. I like that. I like the French boyfriend who is trying to just do everything all at once, like do his job well, but at the same time, he really, I think, deeply cares about this woman and
but also trusts that she's making the right decision, which I'm not 100% sold on that, but yeah.
Well, he did bug her clothing, right, before she went out in this last episode. It's just that she was on to him. I feel like there's a lot to like here. I guess I'm not entirely sure about the actual terrorist plot that's happening with, like, radiation. I feel like this is always my weakness. I lose the thread on the actual bad thing that's happening. That's a little confusing to me. I guess there's a ship that they're trying to use as a device here. But yeah, I feel like I probably am going to get, I'm expecting to get a little lost in the weeds of that part of it. But so far, it's okay.
I would say that the reveal there, it hasn't been made clear, but my guess, based on my own previous experiences, I think this is the premise of the Clancy Clear and Present Danger, which is a dirty bomb from abandoned Russian nuclear reactors, where someone just gets their hands on a bunch of the plutonium or what uranium. I don't know enough about this stuff, but whatever, the radioactive material. And they basically exactly that. They're just going to drift into a city port, you know, for a celebration or on one of these military vehicle ships. And then they would detonate it and, of course, basically irradiate the, you know, some area within the city.
Right.
So that's my guess, that this is going to be a dirty bomb explosion in a U.S. port. And yeah, I think that's where the plot is going to move to, or would become clearer in the next episodes. Spoiler for episode 3, by the way, although this is still speculation at this point, so I guess we're not spoiling too much. You mentioned Josh Charles, who I just think he does a great job here. He's always, I think, an underrated actor. He doesn't work that much, but he was, if you've ever seen The Good Wife, obviously great there, but he was a real nice guy in that case and gets to play, like, turn on all the smarm here, which I think is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like all of his passive-aggressive jokes regarding French employment. How many hours they work and the benefits that they get.
Yeah, that's what they're behind on the air intelligence because they do banker's hours, basically. Yeah, that's why I wanted to get that out of the way at the top of the episode. I'm very much enjoying this. If you like spy thrillers, I would recommend it. There's not much else to say. I mean, the plot is pretty straightforward. We still don't know what these women's true agendas are. I presume, do you have any kind of speculation on Elizabeth Moss's character? What's her name here? Imogen.
Well, Imogen.
She says she's Imogen, although that's not her actual name. But Imogen's actual backstory. Was it her father who died?
Yes. I mean, this is what she's saying anyway.
Yes, yes.
Her father died in this car bomb explosion. So,
that he was a diplomat, but actually a spy and was killed during a terrorist attack.
Right.
Or an assassination, actually, right? It was an assassination.
Yes. It seemed, specifically targeted to him. So I don't know. They do these little flashbacks, for just a few seconds where you see this watercolored childhood kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it is interesting to me. I don't know. What was the criticism that you read online? Do you recall?
I've intentionally avoided the spoilers on what the critique is. Yeah.
I wonder, you know, with so many of the things we watch that have some element of suspense or mystery or whatever it may be, I always think so much is dependent on having a satisfying ending.
Right.
So I wonder if it has to do with having planted all these seeds about Imogen's father and about Adira's father and or grandfather and all of this pieces of family history that come together to meet these people who they are together with this terrorist plot. And maybe it's just not going to pay off in a way that makes us understand why we needed some of this stuff. I don't know. Yeah. I'm really speculating though.
Yeah. The other possibility here is I can imagine that like it could get frustrating if at this point we're only halfway through that we continue to tease out like what's her real backstory? What's the terrorist plot really about?
Right.
Who's really pulling the strings? What's Adila's actual backstory, right? And if we just tease it out for three more episodes or whatever, like maybe if there's like a one whole episode where she's chasing after her, like she escapes or something, that would get tedious if they leave all the reveals until the end of the show. But that remains to be seen. I think up until now, I'm very intrigued with what's happening.
It's really moving along. The plot is developing. You know, I think there's a lot to like.
Yeah, so. I agree. Okay. The other thing I want to talk to you about, of course, is...
Very pretty settings as well, I will note.
Yeah, I love shot on location overseas. Yep. London and France, Paris.
Yeah, and they started out at the... I don't know if it really is the border, or the Syrian border or whatever, but that was also very pretty with the snow and the mountains and all of that.
Yeah, beautifully photographed. Okay, the other thing is Under the Bridge, which you've caught up to episode 5, right?
Yep.
Okay, so I teased some of the things that I was hoping the show would do in our first conversation about the show, which was beyond the scope of what we had seen, really to understand the psychology of this girl. And I'm still intrigued by the show. I think the girls themselves are giving great performances and shading their characters in a way that the scripts maybe are not doing them any service, but so far still very much intrigued. But I do worry at this point that are we going to get any insight into the psychology of this girl? This is a true life story. So obviously very tragic that this happened, but I still feel like there's so many things that the show is not necessarily showing us, but not able to explain. And not that the show needs to give me pat answers for these things, but I do wonder what is the value of a show. You could read this at this point in the show. And the way I watch it, by the way, it is like watching an episode of Dateline, where it's like, don't let your kid smoke pot. Don't let your kids hang out with those bad girls. Don't let your kids read Blenderman creepypastas on the internet, or they'll turn into serial killers. I really want some insight into what drives the psychology of these characters. I am very engaged, by the way, mostly because I'm terrified this will happen to my daughter someday. But I don't know if that's other than rubbernecking. I'm not sure if the show has given me anything more than that at this point. Although, unlike a Dateline show or whatever, I don't think the show is purely a prurient. I think they want to get under the skin of these characters. I just don't know if the show is doing a great job of that yet.
I keep coming back to the idea that this is a true story, because I think if I didn't know if it was a true story, I'd probably think this has become like a little bit unbelievable, honestly.
Right.
And again, in keeping with my usual thing, I haven't read about how accurate this is of what actually happened. Some of Rena's decisions are very hard to understand.
Yes.
From an adult perspective, but I was a 14-year-old girl. And yes, I did not exercise the best judgment, but I still think I had like a clear boundary where, you know, certain things would have seemed just miles beyond that boundary, what's happening here. So I don't know if they're going to help us understand why this made sense to her. Are we fully talking about everything that's happened in the show so far or no?
Yeah, let's spoil everything up until I assume anybody who's listening to this has either watched all the way through episode 5 or most of it anyway. So let's talk all the way through.
So the Kelly character is obviously a psychopath, a sociopath. I'm not sure. I think psychopath is the, since she's a murderer, where this would fall. But I'm not I'm sure, but this probably was explained. I had assumed that Kelly as well lived in that group home. So I was surprised in the scene where they visit Rena's house that her mom was there
with her,
and
yeah.
she doesn't live in this group home. So the idea to me that, okay, so now we're only, not only, but we're only talking about two of the girls living in the group home.
Right.
And then Kelly, who, given who wants to be closer to Kelly than they have to be anyway, but she has her own home. Rena has her own home. It made it even less compelling for me that Rena would need to find a way into this group home when I could see if it was like, oh, they're all there all the time spending time together and I'm left out. But it made it make less sense to me. I did really appreciate, and I've said this from the start, the actress who is playing Josephine, I think, is doing an amazing job of really portraying a very complicated and conflicted young woman. And I found the scene where you find out that Rena assumed that Josephine has been lying about her life circumstances and what led to her being in the home. And no, it's actually all true.
Right.
I found that really poignant. And I feel like when, in contrast to Kelly, who seems to be driven by some sort of mental disorder, right. Josephine, I think, you know,
it only takes one psychopath to ruin the bunch.
It's like a barrel of apples. Josephine, I think she's been through a lot and she's a broken young woman who is driven by self-preservation. And that makes sense to me, right? So those two characters, I get it. And Dusty, I think we also see some depth there as far as what's going on. It's Rena, the main person here who we're trying to be sympathetic with, that they're not giving us enough, I feel.
Right. Yeah, I think that's, I completely agree. That's my same limitation with the show, because this has the approval of the family, of Rena's family. Oh, but before I get into all that, a couple of interesting tidbits from reality. I have not done a deep dive into the facts, but I have done a cursory review of the case. Just interesting to note that the girls, the names of the girls, like the girl that everybody circled around, the alpha in the group, wasn't called Josephine. Her name was Nicole. There wasn't like two or three girls who were eventually prosecuted for this. It was a group of six girls. So I think they fictionalized, they've compacted together some of these people. But I do want to mention that Kelly Ellard, that character name, is the name of this girl in real life, as is Warren G. Warren G's name, whatever his Polish last name, I think it is actually the name of the actual person, as is, of course, Rena's name and her family members, etc. So I just think it's interesting that some of these other girls, even though they did get prosecuted as adults, it's as if they've changed their names to protect them because they were children at the time, even though, like I said, this is part of the public record. But interesting that these two characters, who are the primary assaulters, the ones who are going to be prosecuted eventually in the course of the show, I would assume, they don't have their names changed. And I think there's something telling there, that they're basically willing to change the biographies of some of the characters versus others. And obviously the ones who have like very concrete charges against them, they probably are going to, they're willing to expose them a little bit more, which all leads me back to what you're saying about Rena. We have the families participating with this. They've given this the green light. And it's not necessarily sugarcoating them, because we see the mom is a difficult woman. So there is some kind of honesty in portraying the family dynamic, not necessarily in a positive or overly positive way. But really, like you said, it's the, I think it's the Rena character once again. I just don't understand her psychology here.
Yeah. Listen, all teenagers feel misunderstood.
Yeah.
Many teenagers who have like an immigrant family culture have parents that are disproportionately strict or close-minded. I think there is a racism element happening here. But as someone who has been in those same circumstances, and I know many other people in the same circumstances, I feel there is like a range of rebellion that you are susceptible to as a teenage girl. And this is obviously on the very extreme end of that. And so I guess some people are just very self-destructive, right? Because that's what this starts out with, right? She starts these events into motion by spreading a rumor about Josephine and then going to this party and whatever. So maybe she just has no sense of self-preservation and she just doesn't see the consequences of her actions, which I guess is very teenage. But gosh, I just don't know. It really happened. It's just left for us to understand it. But yeah, I don't feel like they're giving us enough to understand it. I don't think there's ever a place where you and I as adults are going to say, yes, this makes sense.
Yeah.
But I think there's a way that we could theoretically understand it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what's missing here. And I wonder if it's because it has to be too slavish to the public record. But I go back to the miniseries from last year called The Girl from Plainville, which I'm not saying that show was more true to life. But it did allow us to basically fictionalize the story based on the text messages back and forth between these two people. But the motivations of the characters, their responses, how angry they are when they read a particular text or send it, is fictionalized, I would assume, or maybe slightly colored by responses from people who may have been in the proximity or even the people themselves who they've interviewed after the fact. So I don't know all the details of that, but it is to say that part of the reason I appreciated that so much is, as terrible as some of the consequences of those actions are, you feel like you understand the motivations of those actions.
Right.
I don't feel it here. Like, I see Rena, it's as if they just said, she really is obsessed with this girl, period. That's it.
Right.
So that's it. And I'm like, yeah, a lot of people get obsessed with somebody when they're teenagers. That's normal. And yeah. I don't see them not only not thinking about their own self-preservation, but destroying their family's lives. And really, when you think about that, destroying the reputation of their family members and honestly putting themselves in harm's way, like overtly being like, I'm probably in danger tonight, but I'm going anyway.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
And that, like, not understanding, like, is there a self-destruction? Is there a self-loathing? Is there some kind of self-loathing that extends to not caring about the people closest to her because she's so self-deprecating in a way that she blames the people around her? I need to see that to understand. She just seems to, if anything, cluelessly make decisions thinking like, well, it can't be that bad. It can't be that bad. And maybe that was her motivation, but I just don't feel like I believe a lot of it here. And it's not well executed. It sounds like I'm being really negative on the show. I actually, in generally, am interested in it.
I
need it to give me some psychological understanding of these characters by the end, though. I do require that at some point.
Yeah. And I think, especially for us, I don't remember the exact years these are taking place, but I think we were around that age and around that time.
It's 97, right? I think, when it happens. So
we're a little bit ahead of there, but not so far distant that I feel like I'm disconnected from this period of time and knowing how people were in that period of time, like before smartphones and all of this, right? So I think, yeah, it's just, it's hard. It's hard to wrap your head around it, even though, yes, teenage people, the brain is not fully developed. They can be very narcissistic. Right. Allowing for all of this still seems a bridge too far. And had I not understood that this is based on a real story, I would say this is no. No one would do this. And as someone South Asian, like that, just the stealing the earrings, something. Yeah. That's big. And also, these girls, while they were worried about money, I was like, those earrings are 22 karat gold. Just go sell those.
Right.
But anyway, like something like that to overlook. There are things where you know that your friend is maybe not the most moral person or the best person or exercises poor judgment. But then there are certain things where you think, no, this is too far. To me, as a South Asian person and like the importance of jewelry and our culture, that's more than just like swiping something off the average person's vanity table, right? So there's that, as you said, like accusing your father of doing something that like really is just so, so, so awful.
Right.
I don't know. It's just really hard. I think there are times that I have watched things that are truly fictional and not based on a true story where they have conveyed a feeling of like, I'm watching a slow-moving train wreck, right? They give you that. You get caught up in it and you see this character making bad decisions and you wish that they wouldn't do it, but you understand why they're doing it.
Right.
And it just feels like you're helplessly along for the ride on this slow-moving train wreck because you get it and she can't be, she or he can't be stopped. But these are awful decisions. I'm not getting that here. Right. It's more just like, why? Why did you do it, Serena?
Right, exactly. Read it. Please tell me. And maybe my opinion is colored by seeing other shows rather than reality. But I do, it does feel true in my experience as well, that this girl is literally trying to win over her bullies, right? That at the same time that you're trying to win them over, you usually have this radar up that they might be, this might be a trap. They might be trying to get one over on me as well.
Yeah.
And like you said, yeah, the stealing of the jewelry should be a huge red flag for her.
Yes.
And maybe it is, because at the end of the episode, she then starts to say to Dusty, maybe we should run this gang. So
right,
maybe
right,
that explains a little bit of where she was at after the earring situation. And maybe that's why we haven't seen it yet, but she drops the charges against her dad and moves back home. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's part right of it. But still, getting to that point is insane. Like, really, just insane. Like,
yes.
I mean, you understand you're not 8 years old at that point, manipulated by somebody who's older. These are her peers. She has to understand what this would do to her family.
Especially this particular thing. I don't know why I'm dancing around it.
I mean, yeah, we assume people have seen the show. Yeah, go ahead.
Come on. That is like the ultimate taboo, scarlet, whatever letter.
Right.
You're branded a, I don't know the Canada sex offender rules, and things were different back then,
right? But right,
you could possibly be a registered sex offender for the rest of your life. Like
right,
everywhere you go, you can't live within X number of yards of a school or all
exactly
of that.
Right.
I mean, there are consequences, and I think even a teenager would understand those consequences.
Yeah, I would assume so. One thing we haven't talked about at all, but maybe a weakness in the story for sure, or in the execution of this story, I should say. It's interesting that every time we've discussed this show, we barely talk about the investigators, right? The Lily Gladstone character and the Riley Keough character, who obviously
yes
are the big names here, especially because Lily Gladstone just got that Academy Award nomination. So she's definitely a much bigger star than she was at the time when she was probably shooting this show, for sure. But of course, Riley Keough has been in 100 shows and movies. So a very famous person. Very rich now as well, by the way. She's inherited that entire Presley estate now with the passing of her mom. Point is that we haven't brought them up because I think that's probably the weakest part of the show. I don't know. I have not read the book, so I don't know how accurate this is
right,
to
right
the author's actual biography. I'm pretty certain that the romance and all that is definitely cooked up. It's not part of the original story. I would guarantee you money on that. But I do wonder how much of her own personal biography is in here. And I think you mentioned this to me in a text that I would guess, even if it's in the book, it is like a little bit of sauce. This reminds me of this thing that happened to me when
yes
I was, instead of being interspersed like as an additional mystery that we're unraveling
yes
over the, I really don't care. This should have just been.
Not at all.
Right. This should have just been like you mentioned to me, she should be doing this investigation. She should simply be there as the witness to these girls. And when people start asking her, why are you so curious about this? She'll be like, this thing happened to me when I was younger, so I have this empathy for them. And that's it.
Right.
Like, we don't need to have a, I wonder what happened. Are we going to see a flashback of this? I don't want to see any of that. Like, we don't need to see any of that.
Yeah, there is already enough going on here.
Right, right.
With the main story, first of all. Second, I like these actresses just fine. I have no
yeah
problem
yeah
with the actresses. But it's just, it's very strange to me, the attention that's being paid to
right
this woman. And I am sorry for what happened to her brother. And that does sound very tragic and scarring and traumatizing. But it just feels like I am spending way too much time with her and her, the internal workings of her mind and her family history. And I'm only interested in the part that furthers the story of the girls. That's just how I feel about it. So, yeah, like this whole scene in the last episode with Warren G, right?
Right.
Where there was something important happening there, really important at
right
the end, but she's taking the drugs and she's hallucinating her brother.
Right.
And did we need that? I
right
don't think it served any purpose, really.
Yeah, I think I mentioned it to you already in the text as well, but similarly, I have a feeling just from looking at how the show is constructed, they have beefed up these parts to attract bigger names. And maybe another part of this too, I think is, I don't think probably when they were making the show, they knew they had this talent in these actresses, these younger performers, because they're really compelling. And that's not always the case. So I can imagine that like
right
on the page, they're like trying to have this adult drama going on to keep the audience engaged. And they probably didn't know until they put it together that, like, oh, wow, the interest level here, the focus is really on these girls. So I think that's probably what we're feeling here in the series. So it's not perfect, but I am finding it. I still am interested in it. And with three episodes to go, I felt it's funny. I, for some reason, thought this was 10 episodes. And as I'm watching this, I'm like, how are they going to drag this on for 10 episodes? I'm like, I could easily see this for two more episodes. Like, you're going to have an episode where you wrap up the case. There's another one where it's the court and the fallout. And I'm like, that would be two episodes. And that would be the Law and Order version of this. You can wrap it up in two episodes. If you want to give the material room to breathe, three episodes, that's the right number of episodes would be three. But I'm like, five episodes, this show's way too long. And then I looked and I'm like, oh, there are only three more episodes. So that's probably exactly what's going to happen in the next three episodes.
No, and I agree with you for all that I'm saying about my dissatisfaction with the character development for Rena. I am enjoying this. I think these actresses are very talented.
Yeah.
This younger generation that they have. And I like the older ones too. But
yeah,
it's just there are things about the story construction that are a little bit frustrating for me. And knowing that it's a true story, if it's inexplicable to me, my conclusion is that they haven't given me enough.
Yeah, I would agree with that. A couple of things I want to add. Going back to the previous episode, episode four, where we see the flashback to where the family met, I thought that was a really strong episode, by the way.
Yes, very different for what the show has been doing and really interesting to watch, for sure.
And the show hasn't been able to pay that off, but I felt like it's the right type of thing the show should do, is to set the context of this culture, of this family, to at least root her insecurity in this thing that's been happening, right? A minority within a minority. These are Jehovah's Witnesses within a very small community in this Canadian area. So it shows you just how alienated they are, which then at least hints at something that the show hasn't provided otherwise, which is maybe some psychology for Rena's decision. But yeah, I thought that episode was really well done. And the other thing I want to call out was Archie Punjabi. Once again, I feel like the mom character is very underwritten on the page. We don't understand her exactly. But once again, I think the scripts are not giving us enough of this context, but the performers are. Same thing with the girls, by the way. Especially the non-Rena girls, I find all their psychology mostly brought or hinted at by the actresses, all very intriguing. And right, same thing with Archie Punjabi playing Suman, the mom, that we see her internal struggle, right? I found it really interesting seeing the Jehovah's Witness ceremony, because of course that's the people I know who became Jehovah's Witnesses. They usually lost family members, oftentimes young family members, like someone like Rena, and then they need to believe that they're going to be reunited, like physically with them at some point in the future. The irony there, of course, is I know people who made that conversion because of some horrible loss. This happened. It's almost like a strange prophecy or something, right? That they were Jehovah's Witnesses before the girl died, which I found intriguing. Yeah. And also how, in a way, you feel like Suman doesn't actually believe this. She's like the most cynical, although she's supposedly the most devout. And I found that psychology really interesting as well.
To finish out this topic of the history of the family, I thought it was an interesting parallel about trying to fit in and the things that you do in order to fit in.
Right,
the ways that you compromise things about your identity, because first the dad is willing to,
convert.
Mm-hmm. Right. First the dad is willing to convert for the relationship, and then they all become Jehovah's Witnesses, just to feel that sense of belonging. So I think they are trying to create some parallel there,
right,
about needing, how important that sense of belonging is. I get that. I do feel like this is a different plane than converting. So I'm not sure I find it so compelling, but I get it on paper. I did think for Suman, I really liked the scene in the courtroom where the judge is explaining, if your husband is going to come back to live with you in your home, then your daughter can't come back also. So you essentially have to pick here. And you hear Suman's mom say, you have to choose your daughter. And she says, no, I believe my husband, the husband can come home.
Right.
I found that really a really great scene to watch.
Along the lines of that, it actually made me laugh when I saw it, was the scene where Rena is being carted off. I can't remember if it was when Rena was being carted off or whether it was the dad was being carted off, and you see the younger children in the window, like crying out or whatever. And it actually made me laugh. Obviously, unintentionally, that's not the intention of the people who made the show, because it was like, oh, there's other kids in the house. I totally forgot. And I'm sure they've been there at the dinner scenes or whatever, but somehow it just...
I'm not sure they have, to be honest with you. Maybe, honestly, I was thinking,
they're like different Canadian laws for children actors. The situation is, because I don't think I've seen those kids before.
You know what? I just remember they were in the first episode when they she's cooked dinner and everybody's getting their plate and serving themselves. They were in the first episode, but we haven't heard heard boo from them since then, I don't think.
Well, and I think that's the irony of it. I think that is very powerful when you see Dusty with her sister and she's saying, I have to worry about my kids. I can't have you in this house, which would be a very easy thing for Rena's mom to say as well. To her mother, saying like, there are other kids in this house. That's actually an interesting dynamic to say, I am giving up on one child to save the other children, right? Mm-hmm. I know of families that have basically made that decision at some point, right? So I can understand that, where I can't understand this minimizing of the other kids, because they really say like, I'm picking my husband over my daughter explicitly in that scene. And there's other rationale there too, by the way. You do have other family members that you were probably considering here as well. So it's just interesting choice.
To be honest, now that we're going down this road, and maybe it is explained in the real life version of this, I'm not sure if someone's accused of being a sex offender, whether they're allowed to be back in it.
That's a good point. I completely agree with that as well. Yeah. Although apparently this was the case from the little I've heard, that is the reason she was placed there. This is such a small community. That was basically the only place for her to stay. So she knew that being taken out of the house would take her to where she wanted to go. And it's also true that like she refused to go through a physical afterwards to check for any signs of abuse, which would obviously be traditional.
Then what was strange is there was a remark about him swinging a hammer at her or something. But I thought this was about sexual abuse. Not that there need to be exclusive, but I didn't think anyone had mentioned physical abuse, except then there was something about swinging a hammer at her.
I think she accused him of both things, but the a physical and a sexual abuse. And of course, the hammer blows would have been easily confirmed by x-rays and any kind of physical check. Obviously, it's really a convoluted situation. It is strange, like you said, that they would have allowed him to stay in the house with the other children, but apparently that is what happened. So unless maybe, and once again, I don't know this either, unless the children were staying with the grandmother, for example, I don't know all that. That's a whole other digression. Right. There's a lot of question marks over mostly the plot things. I don't even critique, especially since they're probably pretty close to the public record. I'm more wondering about the psychology, especially of Rena. Like, I have not seen her be so alienated from her family that she would do something like this. All that being said, I think there's still some value. Although I have to tell you that, once again, it's almost like I'm watching this like a horror story, because the psychology of the characters are a little cursory at this point. It's almost like saying, lock them in their house and put the bolts on the doors and don't let them out, because they might end up hanging with Josephine. And things will go really badly after that. All right. I think that covers it for now. The last thing I wanted to mention to you, if you have any experience of this at all, is have you watched Baby Reindeer on Netflix?
I have heard so much about this show. I have not watched it.
Okay.
I am hearing a lot of buzz. And what I hear is that it's very weird and disturbing.
It's very weird and disturbing. Anyway, I was hoping you had seen some of it, because the story continues to get more and more involved. The woman who is the stalker now is, he had changed her name, changed her identity to not expose her as part of this show. Then these like truthers came out and were like, the story's made up. He made it all up. That's why he didn't use real names. Now this woman has come forward and outed herself. Mm-hmm. It's that whole part of it is so crazy. She is nitpicking. She's not nitpicking that she did all the stalking and everything else. She's nitpicking. My hair's not that color. I didn't live in that apartment building. That's why I fictionalized all those aspects of it. But, and you have just basically exposed yourself as this person, which of course I think is intentional, because this person is probably a sociopath. And now of course the media is running to interview her and stuff and empowering her. Yeah. But there's another aspect of the story, which I don't know if you know this part of it, so this might be a minor spoiler, but in the halfway through the season, it is revealed that he was sexually assaulted by another man when he was an adult. And that person was someone who was giving him an intro into the comedy world. So he basically becomes complicit in this. He knows that if he allows this to happen, he can get his career going. It's a very Me Too type thing. Mm-hmm. And then it's almost like he is coming to terms with the fact that he is allowing this woman to abuse him as a way for him to abuse himself for this thing to happen to him. So the psychology of that is really fascinating. And he's very brave to really expose himself this way. My personal issue with that is that, in a way, I understand why he didn't expose this woman, but he has not come forward with who the person was who did this to him. And I actually feel like he probably should, and he hasn't exposed who they are. I think he should do it, not because of prurient interest, which of course the Reddit world has gone crazy trying to expose who this person is, looking through all of his previous credits and stuff to see if they can identify who this person is. And on the one hand, if this person's still out there being a victimizer, people should know about it. So hopefully he has in some way exposed this person, even if it's in some, I don't know if it's a legal document or something, even though he's not come forward with it. And of course, the other negative part of it, by him not exposing who this person is that now all these other people are being accused of this. And he literally has to go on Twitter every single day being like, no, that's not the person either. Stop doing this.
Wow.
But all this is so fascinating because this show is now going to be one of Netflix's most popular shows of all times to become a huge phenomena. And it's insane because this show came out with absolutely no fanfare. It's a tiny, low budget British dark. It's not a dark comedy. This is brutal. I can't even identify this as a comedy. It's actually a really fascinating watch. And it gives you a really deep psychological insight into his own personality. And he is brutal on himself, right? He really is blaming himself in this thing for what happened to him in a large, to a large extent. And that exploration of that is pretty fascinating. But anyway, it's just funny that this show, which was probably came out, they assumed hardly anyone would watch this. It had very few, Netflix publishes their viewing chart every single week. The first week this thing was out, it got like, it was the 10th most streamed stuff, even though it was a new show. Usually they premiere pretty high up on the list. And within 2 or 3 weeks, it shot to number one. It remains at number one. It has just been a huge phenomena for them. And it's all because of this social media chatter that has built up around it. So I'm sure they did not expect that either. And I also find it funny, this backlash of, he always wanted people to go on the internet and speculate about all this, when I am pretty sure this is the Netflix effect. If this show had come out on Peacock, this would be like at the end of the year, people would be like, oh, you know what, a show that nobody saw that people should have checked out? You should check out that Baby Reindeer show. And instead of being like, it's the most popular show of all times on Netflix. And that just speaks to Netflix's huge scope that they can turn a show that probably no one would normally watch into a phenomena just through their algorithm, and then social media runs with that. But yeah, if you want to be highly disturbed and occasionally laugh maybe 4 or 5 times in the course of that show, it is a very short binge, okay. But and you know, everybody else has watched it, so you might want to check it out. All right, Sona. So in about 2 weeks, Netflix has a new series called Eric, starring Benedict Cumberbatch. And this,
yes,
is also
you mentioned this. Okay.
This is another traumatic true life story. This is based on a true story as well. This New Yorker father's child disappears, and he apparently starts to bond with the monster that lives under his bed. Obviously not actually happening. This is some kind of psychological break he's having with reality. But maybe this is a strange double feature with Baby Reindeer at this point. So we will see how that is. And that's coming out in about 2 weeks. And maybe you'll sample a few of those episodes and we can discuss it here on a pod. And then we'll probably come back together in the week after that when Under the Bridge and The Veil both wrap up, so we can have our conversation, final yep. thoughts on those series. And then in the middle of June, right around mid-June, it's a very busy mid-June, by the way. The Boys is coming back, which I'll probably discuss in some way here on the podcast. House of the Dragon is coming back for season 2. And the exact same week, Apple TV Plus is going to have a new adaptation of Presumed Innocent. And I know you like procedurals, you like thrillers. This is a movie and a book that was very popular when we were younger.
Yeah.
So it's like a sweet spot for all those things. And I'm curious to see how that pays out, so we can start that conversation in about a month.
Great.
All right. Thanks again.
Okay. Talk to you later.
All right. Talk to you soon.